Let's head over to the Zoom line. Lori Hinz joins us, Beck News. She's been tracking America's heartland, the CO2 pipeline, the Midwest Express, the Midwest Carbon Express being spearheaded by Summit Carbon Solutions. Lots to talk about this week that I know about. My guess is Lori has a lot more to discuss. All right, Lori, how are you doing, first of all?
I'm well. I am doing well. I'm ambulatory. That's always a biggie when it's wintertime. And it may not necessarily be wintertime, but it sure feels like it. We are
snow's
really
on the ground, so it's wintertime. But before we get into it, I just wanted to ask, out of all the big developments that happened in the last 10 days, what would you even call your top news story of the last 10 days? Because not only are they layered and connected, but man, a lot's happened.
That is so true. Jason, it was a really big shock to hear on October 20th, the development of Navigator CO2 pipeline project was halted. It was absolutely stopped. Now, of the Midwest CO2 pipeline projects, this would be the middle. This would be the mama bear of the three. You've got the baby bear, which is the wolf one in the Midwest. And then you've got, that's only, you know, a couple hundred miles on it. It's not like 1,000 miles or anything. Then you've got Navigator, which was 1,300 miles. And then you've got the big monolithic Summit Carbon Solutions one, which comes in eventually is planned to sequester in North Dakota. And that one is in the 2183 range, over 2,000 miles. Last time I checked, it was over 2,100 miles. It has changed, of course, as they reroute and move things around. They add mileage and they move things around. So this Navigator company put out the Heartland Greenway project put out a press release on October 20th, and this is what it reads. It says, the development of Navigator CO2's pipeline project has been challenging. Given the unpredictable nature of the regulatory and government processes involved, particularly in South Dakota and Iowa, the company has decided to cancel its pipeline project. Matt Vining, CEO of Navigator CO2, remarked, quote, as good stewards of capital and responsible managers of people, we have made the difficult decision to cancel the Heartland Greenway project. We are disappointed that we will not be able to provide services to our customers and thank them for their continued support, end quote. He continued, he said, I'm very proud that throughout this endeavor, our team maintained a collaborative, high integrity, and safety first approach. And we thank them for their tireless efforts. We also thank all the individuals, trade associations, labor organizations, landowners, and elected officials who supported us and carbon capture in the Midwest. And that's the end of it. Lot to unpack in that. First of all, he calls out South Dakota and Iowa specifically as being the difficult, ugly stepsisters in this one that are causing the problems. But I mean, he does it in a kind way. But then
now Navigator, you said, was kind of the middle size one. The wolf is the small bear, if you will. And the bear is the Navigator. So Summit Carbon Solution then would be Papa Bear, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Then, so Navigator, where does that kind of, what states does that encompass, I guess?
That is the interesting part right there. That is fascinating. You can look at a map of the two of them, and I have it on my my program that dropped this week. It's on beck.news, and you can see the map and pause it and see the map. It goes through the same four Midwestern states that Summit does, with a sequestration instead of in North Dakota like Summit. The sequestration goes southeast rather than northwest, and the sequestration sites were 15 wells planned for Illinois, I believe. So it's Illinois is their sequestration, Georgia South. And if you overlay the two of them, and you can see that, like I said, you can see that map in my story. It's called Capturing America's Heartland CO2 Pipeline. It's an ongoing series, and it was episode 28 So you can look. It's only a 3-minute report, so it's easy to watch. It's not like you're going to be watching for an hour. You're just going to get the update on there. You can see the map, and they overlay and crisscross those four states, which are South Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Iowa. Same states, same four states. The difference is the sequestration endpoint. The thing that I took from this statement was that it was a difficult situation. They were facing regulatory hurdles, and their investors must have said at some point, okay, this is just not worth it. We're going to be losing money. It was said previously that there were going to be some layoffs for the company, and rather than laying people off, they just canceled the whole entire project. I don't know if those layoffs did occur or not. I am not privy to that. But he does say he thanks all the trade associations, labor organizations, landowners, and elected officials who supported this carbon capture project in the Midwest. So that was interesting too. So he calls out the people on his side as well.
So logic would tell me that one of the other two pipeline companies, whether it be Summit Carbon Solutions as the larger company or the Wolf Company, which is the smaller one, would be the logical choices to either absorb the contracts, buy the contracts, negotiate with the landowners. I have no idea how that works, but I do know that there's an opportunity for somebody, because canceling a project means that somebody can pick up the project. So is this something where, I guess my two-part question, have you thought of that, where you could have either Summit pick up the contracts or this Wolf, the smaller one, pick it up? And secondly, the way the kind of the carbon and the economy laws are now, there's only select companies that can do these things the way that they have these laws formulated. So is there anybody else that can even pick it up?
Well, that's an interesting thing, because when this dropped on Friday, the following Monday, I wrote to Summit Carbon Solutions and I asked that question. I have a contact there named Sabrina Zanor, and I met her at an Emmons County hearing that was held in North Dakota. And so she gave me her card and she's been my contact person. And I wrote to her and I said, our continued coverage of the CO2 story continues this week, and we're covering the recent comments that you made. She made some comments in another outlet regarding kind of what I called a pause of 2 years before operation of the Midwest Carbon Express pipeline in 2026. And so I asked her about that. Also, there was an opinion piece that mentioned to watch if Summit Carbon Solutions would be interested in contracting with ethanol plants that are now left abandoned by Navigator CO2. So you've got, 20? I think there were 20, 18 to 20, I can't recall. I think it was 20, by Navigator. And so I asked if she would submit a written statement so that I could use it on my story that was dropping, which was episode 28. And she didn't write back for 2 days. Now, she must be a very, very busy lady this time of year. I get that. So I didn't get a comment back from her until later. But she did write and she said, hi, Lori, we aren't paused for 2 years. She said the delay is to align with our permitting schedule in South Dakota as we refile our application. And then she said, regarding Navigator, here is a statement you can use in your reporting. She said, Summit Carbon Solutions welcomes and is well positioned to add additional plants and communities to our project footprint. We remain as committed to our project as the day we announced it. It is not often you get the opportunity to positively impact an industry that touches every farmer and rural community across the Midwest. We have reached voluntary agreements along nearly 75% of our proposed route. We are pleased that the vast majority of landowners and farmers across the Midwest embrace the project. We look forward to building a generational asset that will create new markets for the ethanol industry and farmers. And that was her comment back. So that tells me that they are thinking about it already. They're looking at additional plants and communities and adding that to the Project Footprint. That was the opening sentence.
Have you reached out to the Wolf outfit, that smaller group?
I have not. I have not reached out to Wolf. I have that on the agenda, though. And they are interesting because they're higher ups. Their main spokespeople are very adamant that they do not use eminent domain. And they mm-hmm. have not. So that is a completely different style of doing business for Wolf. So I do have that on the agenda.
Well, that was the reason I was wondering, because, you know, it would be interesting if the Wolf came out and acquired those whatever and just gave people the option of working with them without eminent domain. And here Summit has been trying to use the eminent domain. It's almost like eminent domain is in the marketplace now for landowners. It's just it's a different twist on it is all, you know.
Right. This is so interesting to me. Some of the stuff that's in this statement too is, again, you have to, you know, read what the words say, and the words say they've reached voluntary agreements along nearly 75% of the proposed route. I am one of those people who is close to a lot of the landowners that they've really contacted me, and they've told their stories. And Jason, it's a tough thing to hear. I'll be honest with you. The landowners that have contacted me say that they personally know their neighbors who are really disappointed that they signed on, and they can't speak out. They can't even talk about it, right? So they for fear of reprisals. There are people who are along the Summit route. I spoke to one last night who said they moved it off my land, Lori, but I'm still being sued by the company for some reason so that they can get onto my land. Now, somebody can explain that to me. That would be super helpful, because I do not understand that whatsoever. But it is a great source of stress for this individual, because they are dealing with lawsuits from this mega company, and they are losing sleep because they keep getting legal bills. So
it's interesting, because, you know, there are laws in place for certain things. And beyond that, there's just certain ethical things. And, you know, I've heard this beating of the chest that, you know, North Dakota values the North Dakota way. I think over the last 5 to 10 years, North Dakota's lost its values, and it's lost its way, because the North Dakota that I grew up in, this wouldn't happen. I mean, we had a landowner on, Steve Bakken and I did, 2 months ago, and this landowner lives several houses down from U.S. Senator John Hovind. And what he said was that he felt, and he paused and he said, I feel like I'm being raped because I can't do anything on my land. And I asked when he said about, what about U.S. Senator Hovind? He said that Senator Hovind ducks when he drives by the people's property. So I where's Drew Wrigley on this? I mean, there's laws in the books that this company needs to be investigated. And from my understanding, they've kind of thrown that out too.
Yeah, that I think that might reignite after there is an active PSC on the case again. And by the way, the Public Service Commission, the PSC in North Dakota, is in kind of a holding pattern right now. The Capitol is being renovated, and they don't have space to be able to come up with an adequate room to be able to accommodate the expected amount of people that they expect for a simple hearing that is for the counties who are being challenged by Summit Carbon Solutions. Summit says they want to supersede and preempt these counties, both Emmons and Burley County in North Dakota, who have ordinances. So that has to be taken up by the Public Service Commission first before anything else can be done regarding public hearings. This one will just be attorneys and the people from Summit and their attorneys and the people who are, you know, representing the counties. So that is, according to sources, that is not until December that first hearing will be held. Then after that hearing is held and they decide to rule on whether the county ordinances can be superseded and preempted, at that point, then they will start back up with their public hearings again. And they are reconsidering the original permit, which was, of course, denied unanimously by the Public Service Commission back in August 4th. So it's going to be a really long process. And then when Sabrina Zanora wrote back, she, of course, said, you know what, this is just so we align better with South Dakota. So they're having, say, roadblocks in South Dakota at the same time. They're just trying to put their timetables together so everything finishes best I could tell from what Sabrina said.
I've had this Public Service Commission meeting with the renovation and the maximum capacity and all these different things sent to me and by a number of people. And have they put out the list of attendees or who can come, who can't come? Because the theme of this whole project, if I were to actually put a theme out there, it would be this, that when you go to a public meeting and there's 100 people in the room, 90 of them are either landowners or people that are going to be impacted that are against the project. And the other 10 are paid by Summit or by one of the investors or something like that to be there. That's been a theme I've heard over and over again, that the only people who are for this at these public meetings are the people that are paid to be there. And the people who are there against it are people who are afraid they're going to lose their land. Have they listed the attendees or who can come, who can't come? Are lobbyists going to, you know, as many of them can come, or does the CEO have to show up to this because of such limited capacity? Or talk to me about, is there anything like that out there?
Well, I will tell you about my experience, and anecdotally, I will say that I concur with your assessment on the fact that it's a very lopsided thing. I've spoken with District 8 Senator Jeff Magrum. He says in my life, I have never, ever seen such a lopsided situation where you don't have it 50-50, like people opposing it and people in favor. In my estimation, there were in 14 and a half hours of testimony at the Heritage Center in Bismarck at their last Public Service Commission meeting that was open to the public, it was all but 10 minutes of total. There were two gentlemen who spoke, who were contractors, contracted by the company, who spoke in favor of the project. And that was it in 14 and a half hours. It was incredibly lopsided. But in other places, you know, I wasn't at all of the, so I have to give, and I will say this about the Public Service Commission too. To their credit, they are wonderful about making sure that things are transparent and out in the open. They notice things properly and give people plenty of notice. They are great about allowing people in the room. They'll tell you right off the bat, okay, there's no groaning, there's no clapping, there's no, you know, noise in the room, but you are absolutely welcome to be here. And so and they made that clear when I was at the meeting where they announced that they were going to do the preemption and the superseding stuff with the county. And they said specifically at that special meeting on October 16th that the location, the date, not yet set. They said their executive director, Steve Call, will notice the meeting. Staff and interveners' schedules have to be taken into consideration. They have to work out the special session and remodel, obviously. Oral arguments on the applicability of local ordinances will be taking place first, and that will be the only thing. There will not be public arguments at this original one that they say now I'm hearing is in December sometime. The pre-hearing time of the conference will not be a public discussion, but then they will have the arguments just by oral arguments just by the two sides, meaning the counties and their intervener attorneys, and then the company Summit as well. So it will be interesting because they will definitely allow people in, but they will not be making public comment.
Do you know if any of the owners have ever showed up to this?
I do not think that Bruce Rastetter, who is the originator in Iowa has been at any of these, but Jimmy Powell, who is their COO, has been. And at this particular one where I was there at the Heritage Center, I was told by people at the meeting during a bathroom break, and somebody came over and told me, Jimmy Powell's in the building. I said, what? Yeah, they said he's upstairs in the building, not in the Heritage Center auditorium where we were holding the hearing. He was upstairs. He had two guards with him, two guys with him, security, and he's got a cooler and he's up in there and he's watching it on closed circuit TV. And I said, why? They did not know why. And then during the hearing, shortly after that, somebody brought that up. And so I think it was Brian Jordy who asked for him to come and come down since he was in the building and do some testimony. And there was silence and waiting, and he did not come down. And supposedly he was in the building. And so the curious person that I was, I waited until the end of the meeting was concluded late at night at that point. And it must have been 8, 9 o'clock. So it was already dark, but I got in my car in the parking lot and I watched to see if people were coming out of the building after me. And sure enough, he walked out of the building, two guys with a cooler, and they walked out, and he walked over to his truck and got in his truck and left. So I saw with my own eyes that he was in the building, but he would not testify. And it was
now is the Heritage Center a public building or a private building?
It's a public building.
And there was somebody there that needed two security officers or two private security, public security. I mean, that's remarkable because now we're talking safety. Public safety we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't even understand. It was just so odd. And I found it a bit of an affront to the landowners that he was in the building but yet refused to testify. And
that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of public safety issues involved here.
Well, and
a lot of transparency issues involved here.
Right. And his contention, to be fair, he was quoted in the newspaper. Interestingly, the newspaper in Bismarck was allowed to talk to him that day because in the next day's newspaper, he was quoted as basically saying, you know what, I've already testified. I've already said all that I need to say. I don't need to say anything else.
Well, that's interesting that it kind of turned into the movie Rat Race where, you know, I mean, the rich people sit behind the curtain and drink martinis and watch the other people try to go get the money in Silver Springs, New Mexico. I mean, that's really what that sounds like. He had a cooler and everything, huh? Boy, that's...
I'm speaking just solely not on behalf of Beck here, but my opinion is that the company could have done a much better job. And I wish
Let's
they would
talk about that.
A much better
Let's
job.
Talk about that.
Of dealing with the public, and they've made some errors in my estimation, and I'm saying that because of what I hear from the landowners. The landowners are very honest about they're very frank about what they're going through, and it is not pretty. You've got fathers and sons who are infighting, and the kid says, "Dad, just take the money, do the easement, just take the money," and the dad's like, "Kid, I'm not going to do that because this is your land in the future and this is your birthright. And I am not going to do that. This is for you that I'm fighting this." So you've got generational issues. You've got full families who some cases, they all have just an interest in a parcel of land. And that is their birthright. That's part of their family legacy. And they like to go on the land and walk around on it. And they don't want to see the soil marred. Others don't want to see their tiling ripped up. All of these things are very stressful. It's just been an incredibly difficult time. And I see this differently than probably other reporters because they have all reached out to me and spoken about this very frankly.
I mentioned earlier that Steve Bakken and I had that one landowner on, and I mentioned how he said he felt on the air. The reason he said that was because he found out live on the air while we were interviewing him that where he was building his garage was where the pipeline was going. So now he had this emotional confusion of, do I continue constructing what I've already started? Or am I going to get sued now by a company because I just want to have a garage to put my cars in? that was an emotional process that happened live on the radio.
Wow.
And when I experienced that, that's when I knew firsthand what was happening. And that's when I asked about U.S. Senator Hovind. And he said that Senator Hovind ducks in his car. So it's literally a ghost car driving by his neighbors. Let's talk about the delegation. Has Senator Hovind, Senator Cramer, Governor Burgum showed up to any of these meetings?
Not that I'm aware.
Okay, well, that's interesting because I think Governor Burgum has been down in Iowa promoting this, hasn't he?
He has been asked about the CO2 pipeline. The people in Iowa are very straightforward, and they will grill you if you are a presidential candidate, and they'll ask you anything. And so I have seen him be asked about that. He did have a bit of an unhappy answer.
I'll give you the context here. It was an exchange and it was very promotional for the pipeline because he told the person who owns the land that if he doesn't want the money, then he can F off or he can not F off, but he can, you know, go take a hike because someone else will take the money.
No, what he said is he said other people will be willing to sign.
That's it. Yeah. And it was very dismissive to somebody who owns land. And, you know, we aired it and we Steve and I analyzed it more from a political rhetoric. Like you can't be talking to voters that way. But we also said, you know, that was kind of a landowner in a Summit pipeline. So he was promoting that pipeline a little bit there publicly. So that's all. It just seems like he's promoting the pipeline, but at the same time, you know, the landowners of North Dakota are asking for help. They're asking Drew Wrigley for help. They're asking Senator Hovind for help. They're asking Senator Cramer for help. Is there anybody outside of Jeff Magrum helping the people of North Dakota? I think that's a fair question.
That's a fair question. In the legislature just ended, not the special session, but the regular session in January and following, they did take up a number of bills in North Dakota to try to mitigate the eminent domain stuff that was coming down the pike, and they were dismissed out of hand. He just couldn't get any traction on a single one of those bills. The same thing happened in South Dakota as well. They had a bill ready to go, and it was, again, kind of just laid by the wayside. And usually it's the Senate in these states that has been doing that. The interesting dynamic of this is that the company is based out of Iowa. It is a company, Summit Carbon Solutions is a company run by a guy named Bruce Rastetter. And he has extensive political ties. Extensive. He has had get-togethers at his home and have big dinners where the governors of Iowa and South Dakota and North Dakota have been in attendance. He's got political capital saved up here where he has many, many, many allies in the political realm. So that is an interesting factor in this. And it doesn't necessarily translate to the grassroots. It more translates into those people who are in power in the states. So it will be interesting to see. I think that in the country, there is a kind of a brush fire going on right now with the grassroots. I have two words for you, Bud Light. And so it's an interesting view because people are actually realizing that their voice does matter, even in some small way. They may not realize that they have the power to actually affect change until they start talking to their neighbors. And that's the other thing that's really a phenomenal dynamic in this whole CO2 pipeline saga is that there has been some major collaboration that has gone on now between the people in these four and five different states. Maybe not so much the folks in Minnesota. They have a different regulatory story. In Nebraska, they have a little, they don't even have a public service commission type entity in Nebraska, but they are definitely collaborating with people from all across the Midwest and sharing best practices, sharing experiences. And it's growing. The reason I know it's growing is because the coverage of stories has been steadily increasing. Just 4 or 5 months ago, there were only 3 or 4 stories a day on it. Now, upwards of 10 a day from different outlets covering this from all over the nation. So word has gotten out. The story is gaining traction and legs. And it'll be really, really interesting to see what happens once the Public Service Commission once again goes back into talking about this particular permit and see how they do next time. Because what happens with a reapplication in Iowa is that they have to start from scratch and start all over. South Dakota. But South Dakota, not Iowa. But what happens in North Dakota with a reconsideration is you retain all of that testimony from previously, and then you get to add on to it. The trick is trying to add on new and different information and not being redundant, because the PSC does not need any redundancy. They want new information. So it's fascinating.
When it comes to ownership on this, there's a little bit of controversy because there's some Chinese ownership through TS Rise. Right. And they're a major stakeholder. And I believe it was the Oakland Institute that put out some of the ownership. And, you know, for me, of course, we do the crude life. And so when I saw Harold Hamm was a majority owner, and then the Chinese was a majority owner, and was it North Korea or South Korea? I forget which one. And it's the friendly one. A friendly Korea. Because a lot of people are like, oh, North Korea, and for me, I honestly I forget all the time unless have it in front of me. Well, and, you know, and a lot of times a journalist, what people don't understand about journalists, a lot of times you try to be as correct as possible, but you also realize you have to fact check everything one time before you put it out. So when you say, you know, when you say things like it's either North or South Korea, it doesn't mean you don't know. It's just you don't know in the second that you just want to go all in on type of thing. So anyway, talk to me about the ownership here, because it really seems like there's some conflicting ownership from not only, you know, legally, but also philosophically as well.
Well, that is very true. And we are incredibly sensitive to that in North Dakota, particularly because of the Fufeng deal in Grand Forks. So we are always on the lookout now as citizens, at least, to make sure that if we are doing business, we are doing business with friendlies and not necessarily somebody who wants to destroy us. Yeah, it has been brought up. The reason that Attorney General Wrigley is not looking into it at this point, according to him, is that, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me, but he wrote in a letter that just said basically, it's not a live permit process right now. And until it is a live permit process where the PSC is again going over it, there's no reason for him to investigate anything. So he is aware, the counties have made him aware, 3 separate counties wrote a letter to our attorney general and asked him to invoke a new law that went into effect August 1st in North Dakota regarding foreign ownership of land. And essentially, if you own the easement on the land, you own the land. So he will likely, because I'm guessing as soon as the public service ramps up again with their hearings, I am fairly certain that those 3 counties, which were Richland, Emmons, and Burley counties, will again request an investigation into it. When you're an LLC, you can keep things hidden. It's very easy there. At one point, there were purported in excess of 400 different investors that were unknown to the general public for this effort. It is a $5.5 billion project. And there have been various investors, including, I am told, also John Deere was involved with it as well.
My understanding is that this company has already received state money through grants, economic stimulus, we know they've received millions in resources, whether it be politicians' time or their support staff sources. We know Commerce has spent a lot of time on this specific project, and they all make salaries paid for by the taxpayers. So my understanding is that not only have they received millions in resources, but also straight up cash. Is that, have they gotten grants or economic stimulus money, do you know, from the state?
I have not pursued that, so I can't speak to that necessarily.
Okay.
But I will tell you what I am reading. And I'm reading recently that carbon capture and its efficacy is dividing society. And I take this from an article that was just published this week. And it says on the title line, it says, "From Bill Gates to the Pope, talk of carbon capture and its efficacy is dividing society." And I think that's probably true. There are those who are looking at a green scam. There are those who are saying, no, this is the best for our ethanol plants and our farmers. And it's there are very widely divergent opinions about whether this is even a scalable thing, if it's even worth it. You know, when you look at other sources of energy, for instance, you're going to look at a lot of different views. People will say things about wind that are, you know, like, why are you killing all the birds? And why are you, doing things that can't be broken down in landfills later on? So the same thing is going on with this carbon capture business. And in my estimation, we're in a political season right now, where if we were to get a new president, everything would change. That is a real danger for a company like Summit going in here into this situation, where they could have a new administration in the White House, which decides, nope, this carbon capture stuff is not going to be, you know, on the agenda like it is at the current administration. So it's a big gamble as I see it. And the articles coming out are bearing that out. There's so many different questions that people have about how effective this will even be.
Jason Isaac, he is known as the King of Carbon down in Texas because he was the architect behind the anti-ESG legislation. And if you ever wanted to have him on your program, he's a great interview. He's been on Fox News and a number of different platforms, and he's now talking a lot about carbon subsidies. And what he told me last week when we had him on the air was that the big shift happened is when the 45Q credit turned into straight up cash. And that's why there's this mad dash, because you get carbon money now instead of credits or tax credits. It's more of like a stimulus type of a thing. And so that might be part of it too. And that's, I wanted to cite Jason on that because I haven't explored that side of it too. I've only heard about the 45Q switcheroo type of a thing. Do you know anything mm-hmm. about that at all? Or is that just
he's right. He is correct. That is what I understand as well. I have heard that exact same thing too. The other thing you want to hear the latest that's popping up now, water. Water is coming into the equation much more now, because various groups are questioning the use of water that these companies are going to require when they go into business. And that is a whole separate, fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read just a little bit for you on this one. The Iowa Sierra Club is talking about that. They are telling the Department of Natural Resources in Iowa, no public water for Summit, Navigator, or Wolf. And this was prior to Navigator pulling out. So this came out on the 18th. But there was just a really short public comment period that they were allowing people to do. And they're talking about Summit proposing to connect to 13 ethanol plants in Iowa, Navigator to 20 ethanol plants, and Wolf to 2 ethanol plants. And that was in Iowa alone. And they're talking about requesting a full survey of wells within a 2-mile radius to determine the impact of a water withdrawal on existing wells. So that is a whole nother thing. Also in Iowa, and they are having so much problem in Iowa, which is really interesting to me because that's the most friendly state to Rastetter, the owner. But they are having their Iowa Utilities Board meetings, and they are actually having their hearing one of the days. Well, they're having them from the 6th to the 9th of November, and the 7th of November is Election Day. So they're planning on having a hearing on Election Day, which will preclude people being able to even vote.
So, I don't know, that's legal.
Yeah, that's not smart.
And no, if anything, I don't even know that's legal. That seems like something that the Constitution would have weeded out or something like that.
Well, Iowa's Utility Board is different. Iowa's Utility Board is appointed rather than elected. So maybe perhaps they're not maybe as adept on the rules with regard to election.
Well, let's talk about some solutions here, because to me, I hear there's some bad public relations. There are some very passionate landowners. There are some landowners who are perfectly okay with this.
Right.
And I know that if it works in your schedule, you're going to be a part of the Carbon Conference in Las Vegas the week of the Super Bowl, February 5th and 6th, where, you know, kind of that idea of the conference is to bring in landowners and bring in Summit and bring in this AMD, which announced a $250 billion carbon project down in South Texas or New Mexico, down in that area. So these projects are happening. And it might be because of the 45Q. It might very well just be because of that. Who knows? Either way, solutions need to be had here. So talk to me about what's your idea for solutions. How do you see this happening? What are you hearing from landowners? What are you hearing from Summit for a solution?
Well, I think overall, what I'm hearing is that transparency and honesty would go a long way. And that is what has been lacking in most of this. I will say, I will give total props to our Public Service Commission because they have been amazing and very honest and very forthright. They are doing things by the book. They are doing things very methodically. They're not rushing anything. And I would recommend, and I think, you know, it's not a pause, but a 2-year delay to get stuff together for Summit is a good thing. I think that is a very helpful thing because that will allow them to be a little more transparent and forthright with the landowners. I think that will go a long way. Think about it. The type of person who is a rancher or farmer in North Dakota, they're a straight shooter. I'm not kidding you, Jason. These people are salt of the earth. They are kind. They are thoughtful. All in all, they are long suffering. They will go through a lot before it really gets them mad. And that type of, you know, it's the golden rule in my mind, you know, do unto others as you would have done to you. And so if these companies were upfront, were less onerous, were not, you know, threatening eminent domain. And they say, you know, if anybody threatens eminent domain, we will fire them. But it has happened. I know it's happened because I've spoken to people to whom it's happened. So I was watching an IUB. I don't know if I told you this story. I was watching an IUB hearing a month ago now. And there was a gentleman named Jamie Mosier. And he was talking about how Summit had spoken to his father. And they had up on screen, and you can go back and look and actually find this, I think, on like the Pipeline Fighters Hub or some place that posts these videos. And he was talking about how they had contacted his father. And here's the list of times that they spoke to him on the phone. And here's the 2 times that they spoke to him in person. And Jamie Mosier stops and he says, my father died in November of 2020. He's not alive. So I know that they didn't have these conversations with my father by phone or in person because my father had passed away before then. But they had that log written as if they had had these conversations with them. And he says, you know what? I miss my father every single day. I wish I could talk to him any day. So it was really poignant, and it was shocking that the company was just misrepresenting what they had done.
How do you get that trust back? I mean, to me, trust is the new currency for people. It's like people are getting just fed up with money. They just want trust.
Exactly. I think you just nailed it right there. And I think trust comes with sunshine, as they say, is the best disinfectant. And it comes with transparency and honesty. And that's where you build trust. And they have destroyed a lot of the trust of the landowners in Iowa, in North Dakota, in South Dakota. Jared Bosley being sued because he had a 6-second conversation with his wife where he supposedly had threatened people, and then he is not allowed to be near the drilling on his own land. I mean, there's multiple stories of cases where the company could have done things differently. And I think that they're trying right now to remedy that and do that. I really do. I think that they are earnest in that. But you're right. Once it's destroyed, it's real difficult to get that back.
Well, not to give the carbon conference another plug, but that is really the idea behind that conference, is to bring, you know, everybody in, give Summit a new start with the public relations, especially during Super Bowl week and everything else. But again, it's to bring in the landowners that are for it and against it to work on solutions with people like yourself there. I've been invited to be a part of it as well. And so when I look at something along those lines, do you see anybody who could be a peace broker? Because to me, it seems like Governor Burgum is very tainted, whether it be from the investment side or from his presidential run. Iowa, I think, tainted as well. I look at somebody like Kristi Noem from South Dakota, and she has not, from my understanding, taken a stance either for the pipeline or against the pipeline. I think it's somebody like her that could be a good peacekeeper in this. Do you see anybody out there that could be a peacekeeper in this?
Kristi Noem's platinum sponsor for her inauguration party was Summit Carbon Solutions.
Oh, there you go then.
But I've reached out to her during this whole time, and her spokesman gave me a quote that she had, and it was a video clip that was from Twitter, now X. And in it, she is for the landowner. And I do believe that she is sincere in that. She herself is a landowner. When her father died, she inherited, you know, the job of trying to keep the ranch going. I've heard it from her own lips. She's given that speech and talked about it. And I was in a puddle listening to her talk about it because it was very emotional. She is very in favor of landowners. My advice to anybody who wants to be doing some mediation in this is think about the two main factors that are causing the greatest angst with the people who are opposing this. Number one, landowners' rights and property rights, eminent domain. Number two, safety. I think if you could assure the public that this is going to be the safest possible, and they say it, but this company has no experience in making a pipeline. And that really is difficult for people to trust because, again, it's a trust issue. But if you can assure people that you're going to be transparent about a plume model, you're going to be right there and in advance of the pipeline being accepted, training, doing mitigation, going through EMS, going through safety and hazmat, and all of the things that people would like to know if you're going to put this pipeline around a city, for instance. Do you have the effective, are you going to contribute to electric vehicles that will be able to run to rescue people in the case of a release accidentally? So
I was going to say, I thought you brought up a good point off the air earlier about these different, the new kind of ownership that are the pipeline sizes going to have to be different? Does if Summit were to get this Navigator, because all of a sudden that would bring new CO2 flow in and that sort of thing. What happens if they add another ethanol plant down the road? What does that mean for the pipeline and the landowners if they have to replace the pipe size? I didn't mean to interrupt you for a second
absolutely.
You just got my mind going on different ways, because my goodness, this is a very complex carbon conversation.
Yeah, it's very true. I think those two issues are paramount and important. And I think that the company could go a long way. I'm just spitballing here because I don't know what their plans are, but if they are listening to me, I would say mitigate the danger to the public and allow people to have control of their own land and their own choices. And it's a freedom thing for me because I'm a big proponent of freedom. And for me, it's a safety thing because our government has just very few things that they're supposed to do. One is protect our freedom, and the other one is to help us remain safe. Those two sovereignty things. And when you start poking holes in those for people, they're gonna rebel. That's the American way. That's how Americans react.
Well, I am going to ask you about your program here in a second, because, you know, people are listening to you. People listened to you when you took on the Foo Fang story and you impacted a lot of people's lives in a positive way there. People are listening to you here. I saw Newsweek or Newsmax flat out stole your name. Heartland, you know, it was just the most flattering plagiarism I've ever seen in my life.
It's a serious form of flattery, and
I'm saying. So, you know, we'll get to that in just a second, but you know, you did bring up something that was paramount to me, because I went on record from day one and I said they're going to get this pipeline through and it's going to happen through eminent domain of public safety and public health, because carbon is going to be labeled under public health. I believe it's going down the path of the cigarette smoke and secondhand smoke and that sort of thing. And if you just kind of replace a lot of the different carbon with some other things and, you know, if plumes and that cancer study here and this study here and everything, it's the similar formula, if you will. I do think it's heading down the path of public health and eminent domain. Have you thought about that at all in terms of eminent domain? I know they're trying to get as a public carrier. Has anybody thought about the public health side of eminent domain?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just think that way would be the way for this project to go forward. I do not have a problem whatsoever with pipelines. I think pipelines are great. We have many, many fabulous pipelines that have done amazing things, particularly for our state of North Dakota. Our TV station, Beck Television, tries our best to just put out the information, give you the information and we think that our viewers are particularly smart and can figure it out for themselves what they view by just getting the facts. So we do our best to try to remain as neutral as possible and just give the information out. I would love to see lots of new jobs in my state. I would love to see lots of benefit to the public in my state. And if those things do not occur, it is because of that company's choice. So I will tell you that you can make your own decisions. You're smart enough to look at the facts and look at what's going on. And so that's what we do at Beck Television. We our program, as you asked about it, is called Capturing America's Heartland CO2 Pipeline. It can be viewed on our website, which is BEK.news, no C in there, just BEK.news. Search for a black logo with white letters on it that says Capturing America's Heartland. And you can go back and listen to interviews that I've done with Steve Bakken and with Jason Spies. They're all archived on our same page. Our CO2 pipeline has hour-long series that we started with in the beginning, way back in May. And you can watch those and get information about existing CO2 pipelines in our state and across the nation. You can get information about landslides and geological things. We talked to the EERC in Grand Forks. So tons and tons of information. You can find it all and binge watch if you want, or just take little snippets in the 3-minute stories that we've got on Beck.news.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.